Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 146, I believe, unless I'm very much mistaken. I don't think I am. I think that's what number it is. I just checked on my phone, so it is. How are you guys doing? Thank you very much for tuning in again, particularly after the absolute shambles of last week. That was a mess. I can only apologise. The drunk cast I'm referring to. But again, as ever, it's one of the most popular weeks of the year for the Distraction Pieces podcast. So thank you for tuning in, guys. I'm going to ramble a little bit here because our guest is, or my guest this week is someone that you guys have been requesting for ages. It's spoken word royalty polar bear, also known as Stephen Camden, who is an author, spoken word artist. He does theatre shows. He's generally a legend. So, yeah, he's also a speech development artist, and this podcast is brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. In fact, I should mention specifically, we've got, at Speech Development Records, we've got two spoken word albums. There's At Home with Polar, which is Polar Bear's spoken word album, which we talk about in this podcast, and we have one track from. There's a little sample on there. And At Home with Rob, which is Rob Alton's spoken word album. At Home with Rob is available on CD still. The At Home with Polar is sold out on CD, but they're both available on digital download. So if you fancy that, have a look. But more importantly and more immediately, get down to Battersea Arts Centre and catch Polar Bear's current show, Dark Corners. It's amazing. We talk about it a lot. He's genuinely always inspires me, man, because he builds these shows that are like nothing else. And this is kind of, it's kind of a storytelling show. It's kind of an interaction show. I don't know what it is, but it's just this amazing beast. It's on at the Battersea Arts Centre from the 5th till the 22nd of April at 7 p.m. Go on the website. There's a few matinee shows as well thrown in there. So if you go to bac.org.uk/darkcorners, you'll find all of that. Before we get into it, I need to address the new idiots introduced to the Distraction Pieces Network. A hardcore listing launched a couple of weeks ago with Chris and Stu, and they've been dominating the podcast charts since they launched. And in the first episode, I was guest. The second episode was just the pair of them on their own answering top fives. It's based on top fives. It was answering top fives sent in by the listeners. And this Monday's one that's just gone was Block Party on his guests. And there's tons more to come. It's a really good podcast, but they're also pricks. And Chris made the claim. This is my right to respond. He made the claim on last week's one, that my food tastes and is bland and limited and dull, and it's simply not true. Now, for years it was. For years, I only ate pizza, and I still wouldn't say that's dull taste. That's just, you found perfection, you stick with it. But in recent years, I've opened up. I ate a lot of different foods. I like to enjoy a variety of restaurants. And specifically with Chris, I have issue with him claiming this, because the last time we were heading into London, in fact, we were going to see Rob Alton, who I just mentioned. We were heading in, and I was like, let's head in early and we can get some food. And my thought was, it's London, man. I was like, we could go to Flesh and Buns, which is an amazing, I believe it's Japanese, but a meat place. No, it's Chinese. Sorry, that's terrible of me. I thought we could go to Flesh and Buns. I thought we could go to K Tray, which is a Vietnamese place I really like. I thought we could go to one of the pop-up stalls off Shoreditch High Street. They've got a load of different, cool different food places. I thought we could go to Bleecker Burger on the South Bank, which is a really good, I believe they're German originally, burger place, but they're great. It's good food. So I was excited because we're in London and it's one of the best places in the world for a variety of foods and different options. And the response I got from Chris was, shall we go to Nando's? Now, I'm not necessarily hating on Nando's. It's quite popular now to hate on Nando's because it's got a bit of a lad reputation. You might expect to bump into Craig there. But my argument was, look, if we're in Basildon, which is where Chris is from, and I'm from up the road, then let's go to Nando's because, you know, there's limited options. Or Chris came on me on one of my really early tours once. And so if we're on the road and we're in like small town or whatever, let's go to a Nando's, that's fine. But when you're somewhere where it's got such a range of foods and you choose Nando's and then you have the audacity to call my food tastes bland and boring and rudimentary and moribund. I can't remember the exact term he used, but it was insulting. I'm furious. And Stu jumped in and claimed, I love Subway. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I do not love... I don't believe anyone in the world loves Subway. Subway is all right. The reason he thinks this is we have our club night, which is returning to the book club on May 25th. And near the book club is a Subway. And every now and then, I mean, I'd say four or five times in the 5 years that we've been doing this as a monthly or bi-monthly event, I'll grab a Subway because I go for the chicken and ham in a wrap because it's not that tasty, but it's a healthier option of something I can eat. And where I try and eat a bit healthier these days, sometimes if I'm on a healthy tip, then I will elect to eat blander food choices because I'm using the food as fuel. And then when I treat myself, I'll get excited and have nice food. And I'm not even done on this subject. I'm going to keep going because, man, right, the other thing, because I mentioned this to Stu and Stu was like, your top five fucking foods are all from Pizza Hut or something. And it's like, you know what, that's probably true. But that doesn't mean I don't have a wide variety of tastes. It's just, I mean, it's snobbery to claim that you can't get good food. It's that whole... Why would you have a burger when you've got steak at home? Because sometimes burgers are delicious, man. Sometimes I don't want to get into a steak. It's there's a lot of pressure on a steak. Sometimes I just want to fuck a burger. Sometimes I just want to eat a burger. Anyway, that's my issue with their claims on their stupid podcast that happens to be really popular and really good and called Hardcore Listing and available now on iTunes and Acast. On with the podcast. I'm joined by Polar Bear. This next 2 weeks, so this week and next week, it's two of the people I've had on that I'm closest to. And obviously I have Chris and Stu on regularly and they're good friends of mine, obviously. But of guests and whatnot, of just the general week-to-week ones, so not the drunk casts. This week with Polar Bear and next week with Kelly Marcel, two of my closest friends, and I love Polar Bear and this is a great chat to have. And Kelly Marcel next week, I'll tell you more about it at the end, but a really brief teaser is she was working in a video shop in London when she sold a script she'd written to Steven Spielberg. And she continued working in that video shot for a bit. Another little teaser, her friend who would pop in and help her stack the shelves or work out the scripts was a young aspiring actor called Tom Hardy, and he's done all right too. So there's going to be a lot of stories in next week's one there, so check that out. But for now, this is episode 146 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Polar Bear. Let's just continue this conversation. Yeah, let's just start. And this is the podcast way of...
No, but it's true though, isn't it? Because it's like it's the whole thing. Nothing brings you closer together than going through something, whether it's,
yeah,
you know, you're both in a car accident or whether you're both taken hostage by, you know, rebels or whatever. But it was just like working on something together. My tightest friends I've got, particularly down here in a city that I'm not from.
Yeah.
My closest bonds and the people that I go back to are the ones that I've worked on something together. It wasn't necessarily mine or theirs. It was like...
I think that's because you have to quite quickly get over any
covering up or insecurities, because you have to put it all out there. You can't be, oh, I'm going to, again, if it's just hanging out once a week in a pub, you can be, I'm going to be this guy. I'm not going to mention that. That doesn't have to come up in conversation. Whereas when you're working on something artistic or in any way, really, you kind of have to go, or I'd say more so in theatre or film or anything like that, where you're having to portray something, you have to quite quickly lose all fear of looking stupid, all fear of exposing yourself, because you've got to. That's part of the art.
There's no point otherwise, right? Like that kind of shallow, dipping your toe in type stuff, it's like, yeah, it won't fly. It won't fly if anything's going to be actually going to be any kind of good. And also, the second you do that, it's infectious and everyone else does it. And, you know, without wanting to sound too kind of hippie with it, it's my life revolves around that kind of stuff now, so I can say it openly and mean it. It's like, right, that's the point, man. That's the way you learn anything about yourself or anyone else. And it's like, right, bam. That's why I carry on doing it. Not because of what comes out at the end, but because during the course of it, I figure something out.
You get to experience that. Do you think this is going to sound odd, but bear with me.
Yeah.
Do you feel being a parent
has
helped you in that way? Because there was an interesting thing that I saw. I was out with Ed Skrine the other day and out with his kid. And just seeing his instant comfort in being an idiot in front of kids, in front of stranger kids and messing about. It's like, that's why you're a good actor, because you've already got that. You've not got that, I need to try and look cool. And it was something that I instantly, the next time I was with my goddaughter and stuff like that, I was like, right, I'm going to be more conscious to just forget everything. The fact is, I can just be the biggest idiot in the world, and that's comfortable, and that's going to help me in acting and in all these other things.
But also the joke of it is, right, that in that context, in the moment with anyone, whether it's a kid or an adult, that letting go is what's cool.
Yeah.
So in the process of trying to be cool or holding on to stuff that you think is cool, it doesn't work. And so, like, it's massively. I used to know this happened. Our oldest is what? He'll be 11 next month.
Yeah.
And I remember having conversations with people early on. They were like, I don't know how you do it or whatever. I'm like, it's easier. And I don't want to make it sound like it's not hard or it's not hard.
Yeah,
but it's all right. It gives me the focus to know where I would rather be at any time. I'd know I'd rather be at home with them.
Yep.
So this has to be really feel like it's worth my time and I want to do it.
Completely.
But also, it's like, right, it's like my nana, what's that saying? What it could have been like, your kids will follow your example, not your advice.
Right,
It's that simple to me. It's like, right, what am I conveying to you? I'm happy in what I do. I'm passionate about what I do. And I take what I do very seriously and myself with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
And that's when it comes down to kind of clowning or whatever else.
Yeah.
Most of the time it does, because that's just, in the moment, so satisfying. It's
like,
And I think it's the same thing. I think, like you're saying, it's the same thing. It's like that instant thing. We can all tap into it. But maybe there's something about having, a little one that can kind of help you get it quicker.
And I think as something else you've nailed there is that it makes it changes your choices.
Yeah.
It's like I was talking to Hughie Morgan the other day on an episode that's coming. In fact, I was talking to him after the podcast. And because he lives in the countryside now, it's like, it's wicked for him. Because it's like, if I'm coming in for something I really want to do. If he's in the middle of it, it might be, oh, can you do this gig? And particularly as someone like him who's going to be asked to be doing presenting things that maybe doesn't really care about, but it pays well, and you'll think, oh, I may as well, here. Whereas if you're out, you're like, no, I need to really want to do that.
No, completely, man. I think it's funny because that process or that sentiment, whatever you want to kind of call it, I think it just applies to absolutely everything. And I think in my head, it's what's led to the point now where I feel now, like kind of like in my 30s, kind of thinking, I'm not wise, but I'm definitely wiser than I was in terms of what feels good for me day to day and how I get to sleep at night. And it's that thing, it's like, right, the choices I'm making, they feel like they're grounded in something that matters more than just what it's going to get me or whatever else. It's like, it's kind of out of my hands.
Yeah.
Because it's stuff that's more important than me. So it's like, right. So it's just like, it's a thanks, basically, because it sorted me out at a time where, because for me, I became a dad right at the start when stuff happened, not long before I kind of met you, even 10 years ago, whatever. And it's like, right, it could have been, who knows what would have happened. You know what I mean, I've just moved to a city for a girl or whatever else, but I probably would have been all over the place. I like to think I'm quite settled, but without
who knows at that point?
Don't know, man. Don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, I should introduce, I'm joined by Polar Bear.
Hello.
We're going to go all over the place because we know each other really well. And it's why I've always make my notes. But when it's someone I know well, I make more notes just to try and keep myself in line.
Yeah, of course.
So what I want to get straight in at the start is talk about what you're doing at the moment. Because I think whilst I want to talk about growing up in Birmingham, what led you into spoken word, all these other things, I think what you're working on at the moment is the amalgamation of all of that. Completely. And it's driven by all of that. It's driven by showing kids like you were that this is a valid career choice and that you can tour the world doing stuff like this and stuff like that. So talk about what it is you're doing at the moment and what the show is.
Okay, well, I've reached a point now where I get to make things about process. So the thing I'm working on specifically where we are right now is this thing called Dark Corners, which is basically a story that I'm telling. I tell it's made for secondary age, particularly like year 8, year 9, class at a time.
Yeah.
30, 40 teenagers in a room. And it's all about taking risk. It's a story about the 13-year-old me taking a risk, coming a cropper, and then the 17-year-old me turning up, and it going. It's like the takes over the place over one night, and it goes. It's messy, basically. Yeah. It's all this analogy about like the way I make stuff is messy.
Yeah.
At school, they taught us to be neat, and the kind of the thing was right. It's got to be perfect.
And
that's why I never really flew, and why I came to creative stuff much later because it drummed it out of me.
Yeah.
And like I didn't realize that my way of doing stuff was not only viable, but actually it's, everything revolves around me getting everything out, working out what I like, and then the hard work kind of starts.
Yeah,
so it's basically me telling the story, but with your help. I'm nicking bits from you. We're having a conversation as we go. It's just that my whole thing is about getting rid of pressure.
Right.
I'm convinced that school, not just school, but school to a degree, you know, that age anyway is highly pressured, but the reason why I kind of came to that, or I would stop myself, was a sense of like what for? What are you doing? What's that for? And it's like, right, the purpose behind it. And now I'm just like, because A, it's fun, and B, it's the best way to reach people and realise that we can all have a go and do it, and how good this feels to just run with an idea. So it's that was a long-winded way of saying it's about mess.
And an idea being its own end goal.
Completely.
Again, you're taught very much in school that, well, you might not enjoy this, but it leads to and it leads to this. And again, it's not to bring it back to the podcast, but I've said this a few times. I have people all the time saying, the podcast is going well. Is it, do you think... Yeah. Do you think you'll ever turn it into a TV show? Do you think you'll turn it into this? It's like, no, I'm doing it already. The podcast is what it's meant to be. There's no desire for it to go any further.
Well, you know, man, it's real funny. Like, when I first met you, it was one of them. It was lovely because, like, right, here's straight away, right? We come from different places or whatever else. You know, you had your suit and your case. And but it was clear early on that you were excited about doing this. And you had, like, the drive to kind of do stuff.
Yeah.
Like I did. But it didn't feel like you were going, right. You were assessing every situation for, like, what am I going to get? What am I going to get? And whereas I was meeting a lot of people who were doing that.
Yeah, who it's and so calculated. It was really throwing me up. So
I'd meet you, and I'd meet, like, someone else, like, 6 months later. And it'd be just enough to kind of make me not sack it all off. Because it'd be like, right, here it is. It is the thing, right? This is the thing. This is amazing what we do. And then every gig you do, someone would come up to you afterwards and go, all right, that was great. Here's what you should do next. Da-da-da-da. And you're like, whoa, easy, mate. It's let me enjoy this, the pursuit of it. Like you say, the process, the journey's the fun. I talk about it in the pieces about, like, it's like you tidy your room, right? You go tidy your room. Some people are like, right, I've got to tidy my room.
Yeah.
Bam, this goes there. Bam, 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 bam. Hour later, done. Get on with your day. That's their satisfaction. That's cool.
Yeah.
I was always more like, start, 10 minutes in, find a photo of that girl from the summer. And I'm like, you remember this? So I've got to get all the other photos out. Which leads me to, like, the mixtape that I made for her, within the T-shirt that she left at my house, which I try on. Then I've got to try on all my clothes to get to it. Lunchtime, it's messier than it was when I started. And by the end, my room's tidy.
Yeah.
And that journey, that full day, is, like, the best feeling in the world ever. Because it's a mix of uncertainty, but just trust in yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's what all my work, particularly the live performance stuff, is.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's like, right, here I am. I don't have to come and give you a lecture on it.
Yeah.
Watch me do it, and not only do it, but do it with you and need you. So at worst ways you leave going, oh, that was fun for an hour.
Yeah.
And the best ways you're like, bloody hell, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. Did that's you see a thing it? That
and
can that, happen. Oh,
that's and that I guess that's the whole thing of, like, example rather than advice. And it just feels ace, man, because it's like it's genuinely is what I love doing.
Yeah. It's the beauty of it, and again, it's what I've always loved about a lot of your work as well, is it's that kind of I can't remember where I heard the quote originally, but it's teaching people how to think, not what to think. And it's that. And again, I think that's the spoken word scene's a prime example of that. Is I'd naturally rally against what you're meant to do, but which isn't the right answer either.
Yeah.
But it is that kind of, you get to a certain point in the spoken word scene, and there was me, you, Kate Tempest, a few others. It's like, right, you're going to add a band then, and then you're going to do a one-man show, and then you're going to do this. It's like, these are all the little steps. It's like, well, my thing was like, no, I'm not. And then I've seen people, yourself included, do a one-man show and it'd be amazing. Kate had a band and it'd be amazing. Yeah. And things like this. Like, right, but you need to come there for your own reasons, exactly. Rather than here's the path, here's the route.
That's the difference. I think there's something in that fact about, like, you know, and it's hard to talk about this sometimes without seeming like kind of holier than thou, or you've reached a point. But no, I'm like, nah, man, I've reached a point now where I've got an opinion and I'm kind of cool with it, in a sense that I think it's just timing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like when I met you, like, we're in our 20s or whatever, right? But we'd come from jobs.
Yeah.
We've been in the world.
Yeah,
so completely. A, stuff that we were writing was about the world, related to the world, and our place, and us trying to figure out where we fit and where we didn't want to fit. Right, so the grounding of it, for 100%. Me, felt more real, which meant that it just feels a little bit more solid. For a lot of people kind of come, if you're coming in at like 16, 17, discovering this amazing thing, you're writing, you're like, what you're writing about? Okay, you're writing about yourself. Okay, right. There's only so much you can fit into 16 years.
Completely.
And then before you know it, you're talking about politics and the world and whatever else, but from a position that hasn't lived enough yet to kind of really give that the kind of gravitas that it needs. So then you get a little bit lost, and someone's like, do a one-man show. About what? Okay, about your life until now. Okay, brilliant. Some people have had very full lives, and a 16-year-old can be just as interesting as anybody else. But it's like you're saying, if I reached a point where I fell into this form, reached a point where I realised I love telling stories, then people are like, are you going to do a one-man show? I'm like, one-man show? That phrase itself sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to do now? I want to tell a story that's longer. I want to see if I can hold people for an hour.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's a one-man show. I'm like, okay, call it what you want then.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. I want to use this. I want to do, it's not been done before, right? I want to take over a full space. So you come in, this is happening. You come in and you see the show and you come out and there's all this stuff other happening. And they're like, oh, all right, let's see if we can do that. And that's what drove me, like, doing what I hadn't done.
Yeah.
And it's like, so that's, I think that to me feels different to people who are like, right, I've done this. I chatted to somebody not long ago.
Yeah.
And they were talking about it. And they looked coming to me and they're like, all right, it's good to meet you. I loved your stuff on YouTube before. It's inspiration when I was going. So I was like, okay, wicked, cool. What are you into? He's like, right, I'm going to do this poetry thing for a couple of years, I reckon. Then get a theatre thing going. And then I'll maybe a little bit of telly. And I kind of looked at him and I just felt myself go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, right, no, I don't want to be this negative influence on this geezer.
Yeah, yeah,
you do what you want, mate. But I cut the conversation as early as I could and I went on my way because I can't help or identify or even really chat with that.
It's such a weird, I don't get it. It's such a weird thing because when we started off in the spoken word scene 10 years ago, it wasn't a viable career choice as such. And I think that's why those things never crossed anyone's mind.
It was kind of laughable, wasn't it?
Really? It's kind of, oh, we're doing this thing. Oh, this is cool. And for me, that's how I've always tried to kind of live and manage my career, is do stuff I think's just, this is cool. And if it turns into profitable, if it turns into a career, then wicked. That's great. I'm delighted with that. But not kind of focusing on, right, here's where I'm going, here onto here.
No, of course not.
Here,
but I think there's something you kind of leave out there that I'm not wanting, like, blow smoke up your ass or anything like that. But you work hard, lad. And I remember that from day.
In a sense, what I remember
is like, right, go thinking that I was like doing stuff. It's hilarious. Remember we went away. Where did we go? We went somewhere. In the van, right? We went in the van.
Yeah,
right?
We did
right.
the tour.
Right.
Yeah,
and you said to me, and you were like, right, I'm just going to do these kind of gigs. And it felt to me like a lot of gigs were planned. And you were like, this is like a breeze now because I've just come on the back of doing 300 gigs with Dan.
And I
looked at you and I went, what? And you went, yeah, last year we did like 300 gigs. Right. And at that point, and I think, maybe to this day, in spoken word, I've not done 300 gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, here's somebody who's like, right, he's like, I fully believe him and I fully believe what you're having. And you work hard.
Again, it's all relative, isn't it? And again, I think that helped us coming into spoken word is we've, as you said, we've lived in the real world. We've worked in factories.
Building sites. On
lorries, on building sites and all sorts of stuff like that, which means that when we're coming in, and again, I'd do five or six open mics a week.
Yeah.
And people would be like, that's dedicated. I'm like, mate, I'm in bed till 1 o'clock. And then I'm getting up, I'm practicing. It's like, this ain't hard work. But on paper,
like,
that seems
dedicated.
Whereas, as I said, the spoken word tour that we did was still, I think, my favourite tour I've ever done. Because, number one, it was just me, you and Kate Tempest in a van.
Yeah.
Jim driving, who's a mate. And it's funny. So it's just, it was pissing about. We didn't have to have sound checks or big loadings. It was just, let's go and do this. And the fluidity of it was the fact that originally it was an alternate between who would be going first and second between you and Kate. And by about midway through, you were just like, let's just go on together.
Yeah,
and you just go on there with some rum or some whiskey, and you just sit there and take it in turns. And it's something that people still comment to me about, is that, and it's weird how all of us have gone off in different directions and got different audiences, because now you look back, people are like, that's a major tour. That's an all-stars tour. And it's like, no, it was just us sticking about.
I think that's what it says. It's back to your point. It's like, right, the reasons why, the motivation. Same as anything else, man. You're performing, you act, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're acting, right? Okay, what do you portray? You're portraying this. Okay, why? What, as you're a character, what do you want and why do you want it? And how are you going to get it from somebody else? That's what you're thinking. If you don't tap into the right ones, I'm not having it.
Yeah.
Right, if we're mates, if we are genuinely mates, and yes, we are good, don't get me wrong, I think we're very good, we're going to do it well.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you've got friends who are genuinely like, sweating enjoyment out on you. It's like, right, what's not to like, man?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a and it's the same thing with this. It's like, right, I would happily, and I have, like, done this to like 4 people.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh no, I'm so sorry, there's more. I'm like, it's cool. I just don't, like, this, we're going to find something now that we wouldn't find with 30.
Yeah.
We wouldn't find with 200. We wouldn't find with a full year group or a whole lower school. So it's about each one of them is its own thing. And it's such a nice place to be in where you're like, right, the goal of it is reaching the people and like as clearly and as closely as possible.
Yeah.
And if that's loads, wicked. If it's not, it's fine, man.
It can be even more personal and mean that thing. Because again, particularly on a show that might be more interactive and stuff like that, man, that's a harder gig if there's only a few people in the room. Because it's a safety in a crowd,
yeah,
you
but
know?
It's like, that's the fight. Basically, it's the fight that I like.
Yeah.
It's one of them ones where like, the reason why I enjoyed so much going with you and Kate, right? In the travel lodges and the rest of it, right? It was fun because it felt to me like I was part of something.
Yeah.
I never really liked being the thing, as whether that sounds
false
or whatever. But
completely.
Like, you fall into it, and part of you, like, you love the rush. Don't get me wrong. It feels great having people listen to you and feel like you're good at something. And then part of it is because people ask you to do it again.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden someone offers you some money, and you're like, what, that's as much as I used to earn in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, right. Oh, no, okay, right. Then it's like, okay, no, what am I going to do? And so I love being part of something.
Yeah.
And so the quicker I would always rather be every time, towards the end of the spoken word stuff, I don't really do it so much now.
Yeah.
But the last few gigs, I remember the feeling was I'd be on stage looking out and going, in my head, I'm going, I wish we all just ran a table with a bunch of food. And I'd happily say stuff, but we could actually talk.
Yeah.
And it always felt like that's what kind of like led me to not to do less of it. And at the same time, I'm in schools a lot. And that was just felt like enough of a performance that satisfied that part of it, you know?
I get that completely. It's like, I get people all the time asking when I'm writing new material and things like that.
Yeah.
And I know that to a lot of people, and quite rightfully, a podcast is quite throwaway because it's just, there's no prep. I've not written in it. Do you know what I mean? But there's certain podcasts that the conversations I've had have meant as much to me as headlining Coco.
Completely.
And that performance, because again, with... It's a different art form. It is this interaction, and it is disposable and it is throwaway, because I'll listen to 10 podcasts a week and I won't listen to them again, which in many ways it means it's disposable. It doesn't mean it's worthless, but it means it's disposable. It's
okay.
I experience it and then it's gone.
Right.
And that's something that we don't...
But
again,
maybe that's
the beauty of it. Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's the beauty of it. It's not on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's not on this. It's there and it's gone.
Completely.
You do it once.
That's all it is, man.
Yeah.
That's all it is. That is the magic.
Yeah,
and that's why it's funny, man, because when I finally did the recording in the bedroom for you, the CD, I couldn't stop laughing, because the only way I could have done it is that way, because people ask you from the beginning, where's your collection? Where's this? Where's this? And if it made sense, it made sense. But for me, it was always like, look, this is nuts.
Yeah.
I've just got up. We were chatting. I've just got up on the stage, said this thing that I wrote, thought I quite liked it. I've shared it. And some of you loved it, some of you didn't know what to make of it, but it existed and it was gone. That felt like the coolest thing in the world ever.
Yeah.
It's like a moment that made you choose, come with me or don't.
Yeah.
I'm not begging you to come with me. I'm saying this, come with me or don't. And if you do come with me,
completely.
I think we've got something. And it's like, right, that's amazing. Okay, how do you get that? Okay, weirdly, you can get it when you put something down and leave it, because someone can find it.
Yeah.
They can choose to close it or carry on, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to get that feeling across from someone, I mean, I haven't seen you in ages, man. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, right, I'd argue, like, yes, it comes and it goes, but it fills you up.
Yeah.
And when you don't have it for a while, it falls, you get empty, and you've got to refill that well. And I think that it's harder now to confuse interaction via a screen or whatever else with actual genuine moments. And I think that the more you can get it. And I think that's why the prevalence of kind of like hearing people talk you don't even know, particularly like mate, like you're stewing them, like drunk things.
It's
like,
just hearing that conversation.
Part of that reason is like, right, I know that. I love that. And if I get it through people who are technically strangers, I don't care because I'm with them.
It kills me at points when, and again, it shows how into podcasts in general I am, but I'll be stewing in my car because I'm like, I've got something to say. It's like I would have been listening for 2 hours now. Get on a certain subject, I'll be like, no, that's not quite right. And I know a really polite and easy way to explain why that's not right. And you'll agree with me and I fucking can't. And it
wait till I get you
me.
In the mic.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's great. But yeah, it is an interesting world. And I think one of the things that we connected on early on, and it's why, I mean, you say about kind of that interaction for a long while, and we've slipped on it recently, but we'd meet up for something that we'd just call old man drinks. And it'd be me, you and Moose Rotwonga, which there's been a huge thing online, because I mentioned him a few times. People have thought I'm saying Moose Rotwonga.
Yo.
Which is an amazing name.
Yeah, completely
Moose
different.
And people have Googled Moose Rotwonga.
He sounds
amazing, or Kate Tempest. Yeah. And we'll meet up, and this is going to sound horrible, and I'm fine to admit it, but part of the meeting up was to share our mutual love and hate of the spoken word scene. Because it's something that we connected on early on, I think, was a love of what we're doing, but at points, a discomfort of where we're doing it, or the praise that people are putting on it that feels unwarranted.
Yeah.
The first time that people are like, oh, you're a poet, and you're this, and you're that, it's like, oh no, you've got that wrong. I'm just talking about some stuff. You've misinterpreted this. And I always remember an interview with Lil Wayne where this guy was putting it on him, this, I think, as a Pitchfork guy or something like that. And he's like, your flows are reminiscent of the early jazz and the freedom of this and that. Wayne was like, I just rap.
Just rap, mate.
I just rap. And the guy, he made the guy leave. He was like, I can't do this interview because I just rap. He's making it something it's not. And that's, everyone's right as a listener. But again, I think that's something early on that we were like, yo, these people think they're going to change the world in this wine bar.
Yeah.
And a wine bar.
That was a wine bar we met with, but that was Moss's thing. They've places, they freaked me out. I think.
Oh, that way again, I think that's a good, that's a great point. The first night that we were gigging together.
It was like a genuine,
It's a wine bar that had some food.
Mate, it was
and
a
two of the people on said, I'm not willing to go on while people are eating.
Yeah.
And we were like,
be all right.
I'll go on then. Like, I'll go on in that. And they moved the things around. Like, we were in different slots to what we were meant to be because we were like, yeah, I just want to get up and do my thing. I'm not fussed about someone's having some chips. Enjoy your chips, mate.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because like
I'd rather you're eating than hungry. Hungry's going to be distracted, man. You're not going to focus.
But it was nuts, and there were loads of them, right? There were loads of them, and there were the ones that I stayed to, and there were ones that I kind of left. But like you say,
again, I remember another one that was a particularly. It was in East London, and it was again. It was particularly kind of poncy, and
it's in like a warehouse or something.
It was a warehouse one, and you were like, I'm not doing it. I'm going. You're like, I'm meant to be on at like 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's like 11 now, and I want to go home and see.
It's
my
a
kid.
Funny thing, isn't it? Because there were times. You know, what it is. It takes many styles, I think. Right, and I think the nice thing about it, the immediacy and the lack of equipment needed for it, right, means there is room for everybody. The trick of it is, it's like things get kind of cherry picked and kind of like, you know, lorded over or called something else. Or if you want to analyze and kind of like interpret things, then brilliant. But to me, that's not why I would do it. And it's not what's fun about it. And it's probably the reason why, I'm sure I said this to you before, I've never been to a spoken word gig that I haven't been doing a thing at.
Right.
Right?
Yeah,
and that's not because I hate the thing.
Yeah.
It's just because I'm not very good at being talked at. Right? Yeah. I'm not very good at being talked at.
I will go
and support friends, but it's there for the social occasion of it and sit there. And then I'll see something and I'll be like, oh, bloody hell, that was amazing. Or that was awful. But I don't seek it out.
Completely. I don't seek knowledge.
I mean, they forced us to go to church when we were little.
Yeah.
I don't seek out the pulpit anywhere if I actively dodge it.
Yeah.
And invariably with that, in that realm, at least at some point in the night, if not for a majority of the night, that's what it's going to feel like. And I can't handle it, man. There's too much relaxing and eating to do elsewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's that funny thing where you end up connecting, and some people, for that very reason, love it.
Yeah, completely.
And they end up flocking together in that kind of way, and it's cool. And I think what's nice is now to have it makes sense to me that we're now chatting on a podcast that you run that like it like thousands of people are listening to, and like, you know, I've seen you. I saw you on the telly the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
And bad, it wasn't it? like he's on telly. He's like a star. It was like that's he's on. Like, yeah. It was like,
how weird's this?
No, but it was just like it made sense, man. Because yeah. It's like right, you're like right. I want to have a go. Bam.
Let's have a go at this.
And I think I've got to be honest. Early on, whether it was, I was conscious of it at the time, that's part of the reason why I kind of think we kind of became friends. It's like right, we shared that. It's like right. I'm gonna have a go at that.
Let's try and do that.
Bam, I'm gonna do it, and you're not. And before, I'm not gonna ask you or check. I'm gonna research stuff, and I'm gonna go have a go. If it feels right, I'm gonna carry on. Then I might, mate, let people know about it.
Yeah,
and it was less about like right blowing a trumpet of fanfare and just getting on with it, man.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that that's what you can't touch. That you can like it or not like it, but you can't really. You have to respect it.
Yeah,
because
completely.
It's a conviction.
And again, it's something that we've both come to on our own, which is.
Yeah,
which is kind of a negative thing in many ways, because I think it's what I'm hearing and seeing is what a lot of the motivation behind your latest show is to show young people that the exactly that's an option, and what that is unlabeled, but kind of anything's an option, that you can do this. It doesn't have to be. I always remember our mutual friend Riz Ahmed.
Yeah.
When I had him on the podcast, he was saying he did some play at school because he had to and all this kind of thing. And he loved it, but he didn't focus on it because he was an academic and he wanted to do good and this and that. And he got an email off a stranger who was a girl in his class who he didn't know that well, just said, you were really good at that.
Yeah, yeah, man.
And it made him go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Someone's just, like, a stranger has said that. It's not my mate or my mum saying, oh, you've done so. It's a stranger saying, you should pursue that. And...
Mate, it's like
he's in Star Wars.
Yeah,
yeah. Literally, that's the pinnacle.
Of
that's,
course,
he's
man.
Done
and
this.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's so good. And it's like, that's what
but
makes
it
me
took
happy.
That someone to say this is an option.
Completely. And I think for me, it's like my whole thing is like right. I'm in schools a lot. Right, I'm stood there. I'm, you know, assembly, 300 year nines or whatever else. Right, I am not coming in telling you that everyone should be an artist.
Yeah.
I think that notion is ludicrous. I also think the notion of 30 people sat in a room trying to learn the same thing in the same way at the same time is ridiculous as well. But that's another—that's a whole other can of worms on the education thing. But it's like, right, what I'm saying is, like, not everyone should do this, but everyone's allowed.
Yeah.
If there's a shelf with accountant, grime artist, footballer, actor, whatever else, then what I do for a living is on there. What do you do? I don't know, mate. Sometimes I'm a writer. I'm a performer. I don't know what I am.
I struggle hugely with that question.
Yeah, it's tricky, man. But like, I earn a living. I have a family. I get to travel, and I love what I do.
Yeah.
And it's real funny because sometimes that is a message that kind of comes across. It never comes across better than when you're actually doing the thing and people see it firsthand.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the other day, like last week, no, the week before I went away, I'm in a school, and there's a bunch of lads at the front. And I'm doing this assembly. I'm just talking about sharing a couple of pieces. I'm talking about I'm going to be running an after-school kind of writing club. Kind of like to drum awareness of it, whatever else. Yeah. And this guy, the kid was like, he's looking at me. He's just like, and all he wanted to know, he was like, right, here we go, how much do you earn? And I looked at him and I was like, right, bollocks. So I got a big piece of paper out and I broke it down.
Yeah.
I broke down my year's earnings and where I got it from and whatever else. Right. And he looked at me and I saw him go, bloody hell. Right. And I'm like, it ain't loads.
Yeah.
But it's like, right. Before I started, I said, what's a decent wage? And he told me, I was like, oh, right, wicked. That sorts me out. Laid it all out. Right. And I was like, I saw you looking at my truck. I don't care if that sounds superficial or that's what connects with you. It's fine.
It's finding that connection.
It's exactly. It's going, look, and I'm not saying, like, mate, there's the validation. So you know I'm not a waste of your time.
Yeah.
But what matters is the fact that I love, imagine loving every day.
Yeah.
And that at school, that you're miles away from even having that as a possibility. So it's like, right, the fine line to walk is that thing of example, not advice. It's like, right, look, mate, we can talk. We don't have to. It's fine.
Yeah.
Come
yeah,
if you
yeah,
want
yeah.
to after school. Or you don't need to. There is no pressure.
Yeah.
But look how happy we are.
Yeah.
Look how much fun it feels like we're having. And you're welcome.
Yeah.
And so it's like...
I love it.
Sounds like Highway to Heaven or some shit, man. But
no,
it's
great, man.
It's just a nice place to be in.
I've said before, I get approached every now and then to do stuff in schools, and I always turn it down because I think there are people like yourself. I know when Kate's done it, she's been great, but you're always my best example because I think it's another thing that you've thought about, honed, and found how you're going to do it. And it's not
it's not an easy thing.
No.
You can get up there and feel, oh, fucking hell, I'm some old dude.
Yeah.
Trying to win over the cool kids. And I remember I did one ages ago, and it was in a rough school in South London. Mm-hmm. And that appealed because of my family all being from South London and
completely.
All that. And I was like, right, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do my thing, and it is what it is. And it got to me, man. The first three people before me, I thought, oh, you sound like such... And again, they're amazing people and people I love, but it's like you sound like you're the art person who's coming in, or the person who's coming in to tell you that the world is all beautiful and all that.
Yeah,
so my instant thing was I started to drop that I've gigged with Dizzy and Bizzle and things like that, because I wanted to be popular with these school kids. It's like, I came away going, how fucking dumb was that? Because all I went in was, I got nervous and I thought, oh, they're going to think I'm an idiot.
But it's school,
so
man.
I've met Dizzy and they're like, oh, wicked. And all this is like, all I'm doing is talking about just trying to get over with the cool kids who are 20 years younger than me. And
but
I'm
it's
like,
the same thing, right?
Trying to get over with them.
It's the same thing as when you were there to start with. So my whole thing is like, right, I don't really talk. I come in, I do a thing.
Yeah.
So everything I'm doing is doing, I do what I do. And then straight away, I was like, right, let's do it. And we all just do it. We make something up.
Yeah.
And so it's like, right. You're like, some people are like, who's this guy? And even if you're like, who the hell is this guy? You're like, bloody, he's into what he does, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
And so the worst way is you leave going, that guy was a bit nuts, but he seemed to like what he was like.
Yeah.
I don't care.
He's having a good day.
You know what I mean? You kind of like, you lose that. And I don't know, I think part of it might be the kids thing yourself, and you see and you realise, you think about back to your own kind of childhood, about like what, it comes back to pressure.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. It's funny, I was talking to our oldest the other day, right? We've been recording little conversations. He wants to start recording conversations. I was like, he wants to pick topics. And I'm like, yeah, maybe, mate. Let's just chat. We'll just chat at home. But we were talking about embarrassment. And when we came to the realization, I was like, right, I don't think you can embarrass me.
Yeah.
I can't think of something that could happen where I would be embarrassed to the point, like it used to be, where I want to melt into a puddle or whatever else. I'm like, right, what could happen? And he reeled off all these situations. And I'm like, well... Okay, so like, no, we're in town. You're in town. Your trousers, your pants fall down. I'm like,
yeah.
I just pick them up, man, I guess. Be like, sorry, can I get on my day? He's like, what? And it was just, it all came back to me in the sense of like, and it's why memory always comes out in work or whatever. It's like, I feel now, I think it's going to sound so evangelical, right? I feel now like I hoped I would feel.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's taken a long time.
Yeah.
And there's still baggage and there's still a bunch of shit that I kind of like, and I carry around with me, but it's like, I feel now like something's kind of clicked in my head where it's like, it's all right.
Yeah.
You want to do that? It's all right.
Yeah.
So it's like, now what I have is the wrestle with like him coming back with, and he hasn't even started secondary school yet when it's really going to kick in. And that's what my whole thing will be like, not being the kind of hippie, fuck the system parent, knowing that there is a dance and a thing you got to go through, but also trying to imbue him with the strength to kind of like to know what to roll with and what to fight against. And it's like, that's the hard, that's the kind of the fun challenge I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm now at a point where it's like, right, it's all right.
I don't care
anymore. You know what I mean? It's all right. If I want to try really hard at something, if you want to be talking about spoken word, like if you've got in your head, if your dream, you go to sleep thinking about being on the telly or on the side of a bus as one of these YouTube stars or whatever, then fucking go for it.
Yeah. There's nothing
wrong with that. And stop talking about it and go for it. But if you don't, you don't have to feel like you should.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just
Completely. It's the fact, and I guess it comes down again to what you were saying about how, or the restrictions, I guess, of the education system, that all these kids are learning the same thing at once, is you can't empower everyone with the right thing for them. You've got to have three or four things up with saying, you could be a banker. And for some kid, that's going to be wicked. I'd love to be a banker because I'll make tons of money, and that's really important to me.
I like numbers.
And that's fine. Again, that's all good. But I guess you can't get all those individual things.
No, but it's a funny thing now, because like, right, it's cracking already, and there are some, it's hard.
Yeah.
Teaching is such a hard thing, and it's changing all the time in, you know, steering towards, you know, because it's a results game.
Yeah.
And league tables and whatever else, it's hard. But what I feel when I'm in schools, and that's all I can really kind of speak on, what I feel, when I'm in a classroom, I can feel that everybody knows how silly it is.
Yeah.
It's not just the teachers going and going, another day.
Yeah.
The kids are looking at them going, right, mate, anything you can tell me now, I can get from this thing in my pocket in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at you going,
and you can help me there. Yeah. You can point me in the right direction. That's wicked.
We all know how silly it is. So we end up having this kind of role play. We're all like, let's just try and get through it.
Yeah.
And then then you go to another school and they'll be like, right,
play school.
Yeah, here's our topic. Vikings. Right, everybody, go.
Yeah.
Tablets out, books are out, you're online. You know, we're going to come back in 50 minutes and we're going to present.
Yeah, that's wicked.
That's the way, that's what works now.
Yeah.
And that's what there should be more of.
Yeah.
And then there is...
So talking with rather than at. So yeah. It's kind of... And again, the beauty of that is they're going to come back with some stuff that's wrong.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to go, right, completely. That's wrong, and here's why it's wrong.
And you've got to ask rather why than, it's not wrong or
here's what's
else.
Right.
Completely. There's no a conversation. Listen.
Yeah.
There's no time for conversation because everyone's shitting themselves about exams and tables and whatever else and sats. It's like, right, if we could talk for 10 minutes at the end of every lesson,
yeah,
that would be a small step in the right direction in terms of not losing people, because that's all you're doing.
Yeah.
You're hurting people to lose them.
Yeah.
And it's really... Sorry, man. Sorry for taking it. This is my thing. You know, when you...
Yeah.
I didn't have a topic for ages. When you go for dinner or whatever
this
else.
This is my topic.
I have to kind of check myself because it's like... There are no easy answers, but there are simple flaws that are just so prevalent.
Yeah.
That are almost ludicrous.
I love it when you can hone in and learn as something like that, and it becomes your topic.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was two Christmases ago, going around my mum's on Christmas Day, and my dad came round, who hadn't, they're separated, but he was about and on his own, so it was this weird thing, and a few weeks before, I'd got really into the Eddie Bravo Invitational, which was a BJJ competition, but Eddie Bravo had invented these new rules for BJJ, and it was the best thing in the world, and I told my mum, my dad, my brother, who already knew, and that was it about it for 20 minutes, and they did not give a shit. But I was so excited. I was like, and then instead of it just being a draw, it goes to this, and there's a sudden death, and all, just that enthusiasm is like, it doesn't matter if you're into it. What matters is that I can articulate it well, and I found someone who's found a solution to something.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's a problem that you never knew existed, but it did, and this guy solved it, and I'm hyped about that.
Completely.
You talked about a reminiscing and memory coming up a lot, and one of the things I've always loved about your work, and again, it's weird to keep bringing up Kate, but again, the three of us gigged a lot, she's very much a little sister to us kind of thing, and she's going on and smashing it all over the world, but with Kate, almost all of her poems is going to be in some way epic or visceral, or really it could change your life in some way. And what I love about your poems is most of them aren't that, and I mean that as the highest compliment. They do tend to be, it's like, it's so empowering to hear a piece that moves you, and you're like, right, that's just talking about life. That's not some big realization. It's not someone who's like, I'm a poet because I figured these things out. It's like, I'm a poet because some stuff's happened and I can articulate it. And that's what I kind of love about it. So, in fact, at this point, if it's all right, I'm going to play the first piece I saw you do, which everyone fell in love with, off of the album that you've got on in the record store. I'm going to play Jessica, and then we'll talk about your process after that.
Okay. The next one I'm going to do is the one that kind of sorted me out, I guess, if you can say that. I still get sent comments about this one on a regular basis. In fact, I still get sent links to this telling me that I should check it out, as if I don't recognise my own face. Anyway. 15. And I'm sparking a joint. In the park with the boys, chatting, fart, making noise. The girls are on a bench way over there in the distance. To put space between our best means of resistance. It's getting dark and we all want to kiss them, but we don't have a clue what to do, so we just diss them. Too embarrassed to talk it over, then John's like, hold on. Somebody's walking over. Oh no, yo, it's two of the girls. Or the half of the species confusing a world. If they choose you, it proves you're mature to the world. Fingers crossed in my pocket, foot's moving the dirt. You see, you're never sure whether they're going to smile or bite you. They walk right over like they're ready to fight you. They both look at me and say, Jessica likes you. My mind goes numb, my mouth's like, all right, cool. Yo, let me tell you about Jessica Brown. Every single maths lesson I've been checking her out. Something in her eyes makes my chest want to shout, and that freckle by the neck of her blouse, I'm like, wow. Turns out she'd been checking me too. And though I never asked her out, she'd been expecting me to. So just for good measure, extra pressure to boot. Now my penalty's up, but am I ready to shoot? At this point, I know I'm supposed to follow them. And if anyone's got kissing techniques, I want to borrow them.
I can't swallow and the possible horror of tomorrow. If I get it wrong, it's going to be hollow. I can't breathe. Man, it'd be worse if I run, so I can't leave. And I've got no control over the bones in my knees. My friends are egging me on, telling me, you can't leg it. If you run now, then you'll regret it, believe. Next thing I know, we're in the middle of the park. Her friends and my friends watch from afar. Neither one of us is even sure where to start. Stars are coming out, the whole park's getting dark. She looks at me. My mind goes numb. And I try and fight the urge to just pull her hair and run. Next thing I know, her tongue's touching my tongue, and I'm not sure if I'm doing it right, but I'm like, nice one. For some reason, I'm closing my eyes. The whole park melts and we're frozen in time. Her hand's on my shoulder, I'm holding the side, then my hand goes down, slowly strokes her behind. I don't know why, what a joker am I, oh no, my mind, something's poking her thigh. It's not how it's supposed to unfold, I won't lie. But she's holding me tight just to show me it's fine. This girl is wicked. And I wish we could kiss forever. I hear my name and I try not to listen. Open my eyes, I'm in the fetal position. On my bed, age 10, not even dreaming of kissing. Even getting into my clothes feels like a mission, but I smell fried dumpling from down in the kitchen. No television in my room like I'm wishing, but there's football to play, to the park's my decision. Mom shouts up, I hope you got your vest on. And even though I know that I don't, I'm like, yes, Mom. I know now it's better never to test Mom. Forget TV detectives, believe she's the best one. I can't stop Mom, kickoff's at 2. But we'll come back after 7, you catch a lick off my shoe. I smile as I leave. Rally burn up the street. Too dumped in a meeting, too quickly to chew. Welcome back to this week-long 40-a-side grudge match. The score is 34-all. Steve gets the ball out on the right. Cuts back inside, square ball to John. John goes to turn, the crowd shouts, man on! Pass back to Steve, who lets loose a shot you won't believe. Top right-hand corner out of goalkeeper's reach. The team goes mad. Pile on! Behind the goal, man. What's the time? 20-9. I'm like, oh. Poo. Racking my brain for an excuse. Even though it's no use, I still choose to make one. Mum will take none, but I've got to say something. Close the front door, can still smell the dumpling. I can't see Mum, so I dump my stuff. Just enough time to make tea and butter her up. What time do you call this? I don't reply, just act surprised and close my eyes to get licked. But the licks don't come. I stand struck dumb, count down from 5 to 1, then I slowly open my eyes. To my surprise, I stand dressed smart, I'm now 21. Well done, son. Mom gives me a hug. Young man's grown up, graduated and done. She wears the best clothes and I don't suppose she knows her son owes the man 10 grand for fun. But right now it doesn't matter. She's sat chatting with Jess's mom and dad over a cold platter. They're all laughing how we're still together. As we sit to the side with our wine, they get leathered. She looks amazing. Better than I ever remember in those lessons when she drove me crazy. She looks at me, a little nod for maybe. It's time we should tell them that we're having a baby. Open my eyes, I'm 29. And my 8-year-old son wants to learn how to rhyme. Standing at the foot of our bed and off the top of his head, he spits a flow show in perfect time. And you know that deserves a smile. All right, let's get dressed, brush your teeth, and we'll work on style. Get your clothes on and don't forget your vest, lad. And even though I know that he won't, he's like, yes, dad. A cup of tea in my mug that says, best dad. More rhymers in the house, that'll be driving Jess mad. But she just smiles as she sips her tea. And as I tickle her feet, he comes back with his best pad. Right. First thing, you must observe the time. A good flow is like a fossil. It preserves the time. And the only thing of worth you can learn from mine is that the spaces between words deserve to shine. You gotta find your own style, son. And if the flow feels right to you, the rhyme's done. Sometimes looking back in time is good, because some things don't change as you find what you love. Speak what you know. Breathe deep as you flow. Some people are going to bite you to keep the light down. And they can say what they like. But when you're gripping a mic, you make sure that you're right for right now. Nice one. I never know how to start or end them. I don't really give them names until they need names. And, you know, banter's not really my strong point on stage. I mean, on the street, I'm banter boss. That doesn't... Okay, we'll cut that out. We'll probably do what we'll do is just cut all this out. So in between it, you can just skip to the tracks. I don't like doing things again and again and again. So I'm doing all this in one take. And if I mess up, I'll have to go all the way back to the beginning. That's just how I'm built. Right. So next is me imagining I could do a lot. Being my cousin, who is, how should we put it? He's more likely to smash furniture. And I've always found that fascinating. I'm capable of smashing stuff. I just don't know if I've got it in me to actually smash a table. And that's what I was thinking about.
So that was off of, you see how slick that was. I always remember, I'm pulling back the curtain now, but I always remember the first time we did a big radio interview is with Zane Lowe, and it was pre-recorded, and he's like, blah, 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 thou shalt always kill. So, guys, what, and he's like, yo, it was going to, he was though, without a breath, and me and Dan were like, this dude's amazing. And then I've just tried to do that, and we've giggled at each other.
Sorry, mate, it's my fault. I'm just not slick enough.
Genuinely thought about doing that on the drive here. I was like, we're both going to laugh. This is just going to be fun. But, so the way that album came about,
yeah,
and it was good for both of us, because I'm the same. I'd have people say for ages, are you going to record a spoken word album? And I'd be like, the most spoken word I've heard recorded in studios sounds boring as fuck, man. It doesn't do it for me. It's why I've always worked over music, because I grew up on rap. I didn't grow up on spoken word. And live ones can be good, but it's very dependent on the situation.
Yeah,
and the
you get
live
a good one. Then
yeah, it's hit and miss. So the thing we came up with was kind of, are you like, look, I'll put the kids to bed, I'll make a cup of tea, yeah, and then I'll sit down and I'll go through as many of my poems as I can remember. And it became At Home with Polar, which, again, we've now got on the web store as digital downloads.
Oh, sweet, nice.
So, Speech Venom Records.com. And yeah, we just kind of...
It could have come out so differently, man. My thing was, I need a bit of a challenge. And yeah, when there's no one there, it's just me. My challenge was, I'm only allowed to do what I can do in one take.
Yeah.
And remember. Yeah. So it could have been, I remember finishing and then I sent it to you going, oh, what about that one? And there's a couple more. I was like, nope. That's what you set yourself, and you kind of did it. And it was weirdly fun, because you get into the...
I love how much it made sense to both of us, even though it's a really weird concept. Yeah, as soon as it's, yeah, that makes sense. And then Rob Alton has done an At Home with Rob recently. It's amazing, but I had to explain it for about 10 minutes. And he's like, so where are we recording it? I was like, I'm just dropping some mics around. Like, I dropped this kit I've got here. I put it in his living room. And literally, like you hear on the recording, I set it rolling, and then you hear me walk out the front door. He just sat down and went. But it took ages to kind of explain that. Because, again, you've got that thing of an album's an album.
Yeah.
It's an album, man. Yeah. There's production. There's this. That. It's like, no, this is...
It's got to fit.
It doesn't have to be.
Exactly. It's got to fit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, someone like Rob is amazing, because, like, I've done gigs with Rob in weird places, like we've done gigs.
Yeah.
Right? And I've seen him before, like, kind of unsure. But then the second he goes on,
yeah,
he's like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And he'll do it. And what happens is, some people come, some people don't go, but everybody... No one questions,
yeah,
because it's like, I'm doing what I'm doing. And I think that there's something about performance that I've always struggled with and wrestled with, the inherent neediness of it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is like, right, I do need you.
Yeah.
I'm just talking, I need you to kind of listen.
Yeah.
And it's like, that always just irked me slightly. It's probably what I've never once run over,
yeah,
my time slot. And then whenever I could, I'd do less.
Again, it's another... thing that we connected on is, yeah, we're the only two that would rather do less.
I remember Latitude and going like, right, can we just, is it, we've run over a bit, someone's been taking liberties,
which
with
is very spoken word, yeah, and very hosting in spoken word, where it's like, it's meant to be a 2 minute thing.
Exactly.
I'll just do a couple of pieces of mine to warm them up. It's like, fuck off, mate.
Yeah, mate, do you know what I mean? You brought into anybody, it's like, does anyone mind doing it? Like, I'm like, bam, hand, yeah, up. I'm like, yeah, mate,
I'll do a short set,
I'll do half as much time.
Yeah.
But, and then kind of looking at me and I'm going, wicked. And then trying to play it out like, you know, like I was slightly martyry or whatever, but in my brain going, nice one.
Just get to do it.
I can do it.
Be on my way and watch and enjoy.
Exactly.
It's interesting with Rob, because he's someone that you told me is great. Mm-hmm. And again, I take your view seriously, because we will also tell people if we think, or tell each other if we think someone's shit. Yeah. So when you're like, this guy's really good, I was like, all right. And I went to see him at Bang Said the Gun.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy's amazing, because his character is on from the start, that awkwardness, that nerves. And it was literally a year or so later I realized that that's not a character. No. That's Rob. I thought this was one of the most beautifully, amazingly conceived thing of his kind of awkwardness and nervousness beforehand, and then because that happens on stage as well, and it's beautiful, and it's part of the way he writes, even there's a hesitation in things that I was like, wow, this is amazing. It wasn't until I said I got to know him that he's like, I remember bumping into him at his Fringe show this year, and every show he did was rammed, and it was amazing. And But I remember seeing him beforehand, and he was an absolute mess because he was like, I've done some gigs and they've not worked. His confidence was knocked. I wanted him on the podcast, in fact, at that point. Mm-hmm. And he said no because he was like, I don't think I'm a good person to be on the podcast at the moment because I'm not sure I believe in it all at the moment. Yeah. And it blew my mind because he's one of my favourite for 1 hour shows. I think he's the only person a 1 hour show of his I've seen.
Yeah.
I've seen more than once.
Yeah.
And I ain't that guy really. I'll watch it and then I'll be like, right, that's cool. Even if I love it, that's an hour.
Yeah,
that's,
man.
It's a lot of time. He's every one of his I've managed to see. I've had to go and see it again.
It's like anything with it was so much fun to when you find not fun. You know, I didn't discover him or whatever, but for yourself. I mean,
completely.
I'd never seen him before. The first thing kind of seeing, I was like, I'm watching somebody being like hand led by an idea.
Yeah.
What's more exciting than watching somebody being led by an idea? And like that's the thing that you always get from Rob is the sense of like the idea is leading and he's following it, finding things as he goes. And when it's time, the idea will let him go and he'll go into the next one.
And that's the beauty is following it relentlessly. And he's a massive realization that it's not about, and this sounds like a dig now, it's not about this amazing idea. Mm. Like I've never done an hour one man show because I've never had that one thing that will do it. But seeing Rob, it was like, right, he's just picked the colour yellow, and that's it. He'll now make a show out of that. It's not that he's got to come up with this amazing idea. His writing and his persona and his way, that is the hour show. But the subject is almost irrelevant in the right context, that he's just right, I can now produce this. And
the irony being, right, once you choose anything, definitely, then things stick to conviction. So before you know it, everything is about hello.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything that you're thinking about and all the stuff you didn't know you were thinking about comes right to the front, and before you know it, the relationship between you and your stepdad is, do you know what I mean? It's like these are things that you kind of learn through kind of doing, and it's always the same thing. Every time I start a new thing, right, it's like, right, I have an idea. Straight after I have an idea for something, my brain tells me it's shit.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, right, if I fight through that one, I get to go a little bit further, then my brain will tell me it's shit again.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to get to a point where it's like, well, okay, why isn't it shit? Why isn't it shit? Shit. And then another thing pops up and goes, like, I'm in it as well. Yeah. It's not shit because of this. And you're like, whoa. Yeah. You gather enough of them and you kind of see it through. Do you know what I mean? It's like, whether it's any of the stories, whether it's the books, whether it's these things, or whether it's like spoken word pieces, it's like, right, why would I do it when I could just sit and watch, you know, The Shield or whatever? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that thing of like, okay, right, because I want to feel like, right, this needs, I need to, or I really want this to be out. I want to know what
you're
going to
say. Is the need there to get the feedback and the reaction as well? Because I think one of the weirdest things of writing can be that you get to a point where you don't know what is good.
Yeah.
So the only way to find that out really is to get it out
to
there.
A degree.
And I've had that with pieces where I've put a track out and there's been a certain line that people have gone nuts over, and I've been like, oh, yeah, that is good, isn't it? I didn't know that was, but that's fucking, I'm a great writer. Suddenly, like, shit, I thought this was a throwaway thing, and now it gives you that. So is that part of it, to get that validation or get that realization?
But it's like, it's validation in the sense that it's like, right, yes, I want to know that I feel like I'm good at something.
Yeah.
But more so, I think for me, it's a sense of like, right, now it's all kind of stick towards, like, yes, it's like you said, you may have got Riz getting that email, right?
Yeah.
I get this email again. I get an email, right?
Yeah.
And without wanting to name anyone, you'd be like, right, hi, my name's Emma. I'm like 16. I live in Croydon and whatever else. I go to bookshop every Saturday. And I just like being in there. Like, and they say don't judge a book by its cover, but I always do. And I go around and I pick one. It's kind of like a pinky colour. And I pulled it out and I had a look at it. I started reading. And next thing I knew, they were kicking me out at the end of the day. And I was like, right, I haven't got any money to buy this. So I went to my library. And I saw it in the library and I took it out. I've taken it out six times now, right? This is, you've written my life.
Yeah.
And you're like, right. And then it always ends with like an apology. Sorry to waste your time. I know you must be really busy. He left, right? I just cry, man. Can't help it.
Yeah.
You read it, you're like, what is there other than that?
I'm not
sure there's anything.
Yeah.
That, do you know what I mean? It's like, right, you just punch me in the heart. You're like, right, yeah, I have to do more of this.
Yeah.
Because that's what I would have done. If I had Google.
Yeah.
I would have done that. There were people I wanted to just let know. Not to kind of like become chummy with, but like, right, I want you to know, mate, this has changed things for me. Whether it was an album, a film, whatever else. And it's just like, right, that's what the validation is. Knowing that, yes, it's great if lots of people like it. Yes, it's great when people tell you it's kind of great. But when people tell you that what's happened is made them want to do something or to think about something, you're like, right, that you can't be.
It's that thing. To make you realise that this stuff, as you said, that you're doing not with an end goal, yeah. not with anything other than creating, is out there and doing something. And we're at a point where we came into the spoken word scene and kind of had our moment, you know, high up in the rankings, mm-hmm. like five, six... A years ago now. So came in 10 years ago, and we're only around for a couple of years, really. But again, I have people, and it blows my mind, that there'll be a spoken word artist that I've watched or got into, and they'll be like, oh, the first thing I heard was Let From God to Man, or this or that. And you'll be like, oh, shit, that's kind of weird. It makes you feel old, but it makes you feel that, oh, that stuff where it was us messing around as mid-20s or late 20s or whatever, it did mean something. Yep. And memories I've forgotten have meant something more to someone else than it did to me at the time.
And, that's only the droplet of people who've actually got in touch.
Yeah.
There's all these other people. And it's like, right, it's my cousin who used to say to me early on, I remember early on, like the first time like a YouTube thing went up, someone else had recorded it and it was just on there. And my cousin rung me up, he was like, saw you on the YouTube. I'm like, all right, mate. He's like, yeah, that'll be there once you're dead. And I was like, what is that? That'll be long, long after you, the scrap heap of the internet. Yeah. Right, see you later. Kind of left. And I kind of had a weird, like, horrible kind of feeling.
Yeah, was that a threat? Or?
Yeah, I mean, what was that? What was that? It was a nice one, Dave. And then it became like, right, no. Here's this album that anyone could look at any time. So I always, from that point on, I started thinking about everything as a time capsule.
Yeah.
It's like, right, the things that I'd scripted. It's why, to be honest, when we chatted, I remember chatting to you and I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna write 10 minutes worth of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna rock up to open mic and just see what that feels again. Yeah. Tried, mate, couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it because that time capsule, that time, it feels like it's kind of gone. And I can write stuff. I could try and write stuff that's kind of smaller, but it always just now starts spreading out. I'm like, what if I could talk to this person about this character?
You found how you write and how you create, I guess.
Because
we did that at one point, didn't we? You, me, Kate Tempest and I think Berkovich all shared an open mic slot.
Yeah, we did. It was at Banks of the Gun.
But, Rich, again, it gave us a moment to feel like the all-stars of the poetry scene because we'd all gone off doing other things. We did a tiny bit each. And again, I was the same. I was like, I'm going to try this out. It's going to be amazing. I tried it out. I felt nothing afterwards.
Yeah, same.
Really, because it wasn't that craft thing. It's different ways of writing. I always remember doing a gig with Luke Wright,
mm-hmm.
and he got up, and before he was doing this piece, he was like, oh, this is a first draft, blah, 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 blah. And he did his thing, and then I was up next, and I got up, and I started to say, oh, this is a first draft, and I couldn't get that out without laughing, because I was like, the idea of me doing a first draft is crazy, or performing a first draft, rather, I guess, that if I'm up there, that's it. If it works, I'll be doing that for fucking years. You won't be able to stop hearing that shit. If it doesn't work, I'll forget about it, and it won't be a thing. And it's as simple as that. There's not that mentality of...
But it's different, isn't it? It's different and that there are people, I think, who kind of grew up with something. Like, people like him, like, they kind of grew up, and there were people they looked at who they kind of emulating, and they're kind of, like, looking at it. And it's like, right, it was the process, and that was all part of it. And that's what I used to feel slightly guilty sometimes, actually, because we'd turn up to these things, and we were like, you know, without wanting to... We were like the slightly tougher kids in school or something. Yeah, so it's like, which is always hilarious. But it's like, right, you're sitting there, and it's like, right. But it's also very easy. You forget. That can be quite intimidating sometimes to people. Do you know what I mean? You're a big lad, right? So it's one of the words where it's like, right, we go there, and it's like, right. And I learnt that my immediate response to something that I didn't understand shouldn't be like, what the bloody hell, what kind of thing? And it's like, well, no, it's just not for me. It's like, it's for different strokes, different folks.
Yeah.
But that took ages, man.
Yeah.
That took ages because a lot of my default settings are defensive because I grew up thinking that's what you had to justify everything, like you say.
Completely.
What? Show my no, mate.
Yeah.
If I'm speaking it to you, it's a nugget. Like it or lump it, we'll move on.
If you don't like it, fuck you. I'm never going to do it again. But you're the one in the wrong here.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Completely. or if I speak it, I don't like the sound of it coming out of my mouth. I might even just stop halfway through and go, no, I'm not having that.
Yeah.
And then do something else. But it's like, anything's fine. Everything's kind of fine. But it's hilarious that I've arrived at a place in my own work where, like, it's, there are core values of that feel like they're still there in the sense of, like, right, if I believe something, you're not going to convince me otherwise. But also, like, I'm just, the fun of it for me is it not being polished.
It's the openness,
being kind of finished. Like, this thing here tonight, it's like, right, I know what I want to have, what's going to happen, but I don't know what I'm going to say exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, that brought back the kind of fight or the kind of nerves that are kind of, like, watered 100%. Away. Do you know what I mean?
So, I always remember you're saying early on, it's something that's stuck with me, is when you're writing or creating something, you try and think, how would I feel if my boys from back home walked in there?
Yeah.
Would I be embarrassed of what I'm doing? And would I think, oh, fuck, they've seen me in this, in a wine bar or whatever else, and would they be like, what the fuck's Stephen doing? What are you doing? So is is that something that still motivates you? And then I kind of want to get into back home, to growing up in the Midlands.
That's the funny thing. Like, that's gone from being feeling like a strength to a genuine weakness.
Right.
To now at a point where, like, whatever I'm doing, I know that they're with me. So they're kind of almost with me because I don't do what they're familiar to them or whatever else.
Yeah, and again, that's a good thing, right? That's the excitement. Oh, he's doing that.
He's covered in paint. He's just come back from New Zealand. Go on, Stevie. They don't know.
Yeah.
But they're like, but to start with, completely. You know, I mean, from the first gig that I made a friend come with me, because I didn't have a clue what it was.
Yeah.
If he hadn't have been there, I wouldn't have gone on for sure.
So what was the first gig?
It was in a comedy club. I didn't know at the time, but it was a slam.
Right.
Before I went, I didn't know. It was this packed out comedy club, Glee Club in Birmingham.
Yeah.
Right. I get in there, you got to put your name in a hat. I'd been calling myself Polar Bear a little bit.
Yeah.
He was like, Polar Bear's shit name. I said, Polar Bear Ninja, mate. That's what you call yourself. I'm like, no. He's like, trust me. I had a couple of drinks, put it in the hat. First out, I get up, do this story. It was about, actually, at the time, found out that there might be I might be leaving. I wanted to leave a place. It's about just leaving a place. Got up, did it, sat down. He was like, yeah, fair play, cool. We thought we were done.
Yeah.
Right, we're sitting, but we were wedged in because it's rammed. And then there's these three people. So he judges, they hold up these numbers. And he's looking at me, he's like, what's that? Is that like swimming or is that diving or whatever? And I'm like, right. He's like, why? He's like, okay, cool, decent score, guys. He's like, right, okay. Big guy gets up, doesn't have all this crazy rant about killing people while he's shopping. I'm like, what the hell is this? We've got to get out. We can't get out.
We're stuck.
Half time, we'll go, don't worry, half time. Through to the next round, and Polar Bear Ninja, he's like, you sit down. You can win something. I've seen it as prizes, right? More drinks. Do get up and do that. Win a phone. Right?
Amazing. Didn't
have a, win a phone, right? And I remember coming out, and right, I'm going, what was that? He's like, I don't know, mate, but you won a phone.
Yeah.
Right?
That's proper.
A Chinese. Well, you got a 20 quid, so I won 20 quid. We've got a Chinese. We sat on the bullring steps, and he's like, right, I don't know what this is. You're doing this again.
Yeah.
Let's find it out. And then the geezer sent me an email and invited me to Glastonbury. 2005, did my research in between that, and it's like, right, this does not look like my thing at all, man. This is like angry political or like relationship difficulties, like venting soapbox stuff. What the hell? And they wouldn't come with me. Okay, right, I can. What's my version of it? Wrote a couple of stories that rhymed, went, and then literally the most cliche way, one thing led to another.
Yeah.
I'm on a tour, I'm getting picked to do longer things and whatever else, and then it's a thing. But, like, it always at that point was, like, in the back of my mind, right, if Andy was here...
Yeah,
right.
What would
he
think?
Don't get me wrong, man. Andy would come all the way through. Andy would come to the gigs, and I would see him trying his hardest not to leave.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, he's like, even when like, I'm like, he's like, when you on? Or how many times does someone say, when you on? And I'm like, I think I'm on near the end. He's like, yeah, great. I'm going to get some food.
Yeah.
And he'd go and he'd come back. He's like, you on yet? Have you been on yet? He's just hoping that he
wouldn't
have to,
you wouldn't have to sit through the
not because he thought it just didn't make sense to him, and it made him nervous.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, and particularly back then, you've nailed it there, that it was either posh kind of a literature students doing translations or doing these incredibly intense bits that I might not be able to get my head around, or it was very much working class, still angry at Thatcher, kind of ranting, and it was like, where does that... At that point, there didn't seem to be this thing in between. And that's changed now. Now completely. The spoken word scene is so broad and so welcoming of all things. I remember, and I think, again, I think Kate's a massive influence on that, because I remember seeing her at gigs and people turning their nose up, stumbling on stage with a bag of beers, kind of had a few drinks, and then doing this amazing piece referencing Greek mythology and all this other stuff, and then going, oh shit, this is all right.
What
I remember at Latitude once, I was saying to someone, oh, I'm waiting for Kate Tempest to go on, and they were like, is that the something like the little boy off the working off the estate or something like that. It was something real, and Latitude can be a bit snooty.
Yeah.
And she went on and destroyed the whole tent and has obviously headlined there and done amazing things. And that was an important thing to break that up, to go, it's not, it doesn't have to be this, it doesn't have to be that. It's literally spoken word. It's why that's the term I prefer to poetry or anything else, because it's just words being spoken,
completely,
right? It's so fucking literal.
But it just means that, like, I think what you kind of respond to, and I'm thinking about like kind of where I come from, where I kind of grew up with.
Yeah.
Like I grew up around talkers.
Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't like they were.
So who was that? Was that people in your family, in the kitchen, in the dinner table?
Yeah. So my family come from Ireland and Jamaica.
Yeah.
On my mom's side, the side that is Birmingham and where I kind of grew up with.
We all
lived in the same house for a long time. Cousins and auntie and uncles all crammed in before people could afford to buy their own places or whatever else.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad's side of the family were English and miners from Yorkshire. And that kind of like, when they kind of, my folks split up, that kind of, they kind of went away basically.
Yeah.
So the family I grew up with were my Jamaican grandparents and some Irish cousins. And it was just people around the house just talking all the time. But talking in a way that like my nan would hold like 20 people in the kitchen while she was doing something else with her back to them.
Yeah.
With some story about, you know, some German priest offering to like leave the church and marry her on the boat over.
Right.
You could feel the magic of it then.
Yeah.
But it never felt like it was never.
She's not got a mic. She's not even turned round to face her audience.
And it was that level of like right, and because they're in it. Like my uncle, like talking about the night before, and you know that thing when people do, your mates do it, man. He's like, so I've gone up to him. And it's not past tense, it's not present tense, or it's like, what are they then? And like, to the point where you're like, wait, easy, you're not there now, don't hit me, kind of thing. But being in it, and that is something that like I always found kind of mesmerizing. And then it was like, right, but then suddenly way later when stuff started, when I've been writing rhymes and whatever else, but it was never, performance was never part of it. We used to make music so we didn't have to go out in trouble, basically. So it's like, we never thought about doing gigs. But then when I started doing spoken word stuff, it became clear to my head, it was like, right, all these things that are coming out are relating back to that time, because it's like, right, that's what I grew up with. I'm surrounded by it. And that's without thinking about like music and me like falling in love with hip hop and the rest of it. It's like, right, I just grew up and it's always a celebration. And it was always this sense of like, right, it all made sense, but it always stayed with you afterwards. Like, these stories that they tell, it'd be like, right, it wasn't like, there was different ways of being kind of like clever, different ways of being nuanced and kind of layered, I think. And that's what I always hoped. From that moment when I kind of triggered that, it was like a homage to where I was from and who I was from.
Yeah.
I was like, right, what do I want to do? I want to tell stories cool. I like rhyming. So most of them rhyme at this point in time. Right, okay. What is it? Oh, I want it to make sense. I want it to look at me and go, yeah, I remember that. I want it to be the same. I want it to be talking to me, get up, and it's just the same, more crafted. But then I want you to go like, later on, go, I want you to think about yourself. I want you to leave going, yeah, I remember your version of whatever I've said. That's what's exciting.
Yeah.
Because that means that there's an impact, there's a resonance with it. But it's also, it's not about impressing.
Yeah.
It's about hopefully a kind of a connecting thing, you know.
Did you have to have that conversation with yourself early on to kind of talk yourself into it? Because talking yourself into rapping, it's fucking easy. You've grown up loving rappers, loving rap.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. You've not grown up loving spoken word artists and things like that. So did you have to kind of go, that is all right, and justify it to yourself in some way?
I was doing that for like 5 years, though.
Yeah.
I mean, because it wasn't until the end of that first gig where the geezer came up. He's like, come Glastonbury. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like,
I love that you got booked for Glastonbury off your first open mic.
Don't get me wrong, I milk it now. But it's like, but that's when he said spoken word. And I was like, I literally said, what's that?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's what you've just done. And I was like, all right, okay. So like, but then, and then, and then on the back of Glastonbury, I came back and like, I'd never been to a festival at that point.
Yeah.
I was barefoot, like, against all advice. I was barefoot for 3 days.
Amazing.
Like, walking around like some kind of weird hobbit. Right? I met Jamie. I met Inua. I met Burko then.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, I got memories of, I recorded us. I had like a dictaphone. Someone told me to take a dictaphone, and I've got a recording of the four of us underneath a big like privet frog.
Amazing.
I'd never had a I'm a city kid, right?
Yeah.
I've never once been in a space where there was nothing around you.
Yeah.
I just hadn't.
Yeah.
And it changed me, and I came back and I was temping at the time, like in the law courts. I was like, quit.
Oh, wow.
No one gave a shit. I was I'm leaving. Yeah. Right. And then my sister was like, what are you going to do now? And I literally.
Who was that guy?
I don't know, but
he's just quit. So.
He's rubbish at data entry. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I think when I came home to my, I remember my sister, she was like back from college. I remember like she was watching, or whatever she watched, some one of them antique shows. I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, I quit. And she was like, why have you quit? What are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. And genuinely, it's like unbelievable. The phone rang.
Oh, wow.
That afternoon. And it was a geezer called Russell from Apples and Snakes. And he's like, right, I saw you at Glastonbury last month. We're organising a tour. We're picking an artist from each region around the UK. We're going to commission you to write a 10-minute piece, and then we're going to tour it round. And I'm like, "What are you up for it?" I'm like, "I don't know." He's like, "Oh, we're going to pay you this much to write it." and then you get this much per gig, and obviously all expenses are kind of paying. And he's like, is that something? I'm like, 1 second. What the fuck? I remember going, Jen, Geezer wants to pay me. And I remember going,
maybe
you could email me, please.
Yeah.
Maybe you could email. And he's like, boom, hung up. And it was like, what? And then that was a massive moment for me, because it's like, right, okay, it's called, the word we were given was exposed. And I was like, right, this is going to be the best thing anyone's ever fucking heard.
Yeah.
And I remember, and luckily, which isn't always the case, an idea came quite quickly.
Yeah.
So I had the time to kind of craft it. So I wrote a thing about me and my cousin, actually, how, like, it was, as far as the family were concerned, because I was the first one to go uni, so I couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
He could do anything right.
Yeah.
And the fucked up thing was, the stuff I was getting up to was way worse than the stuff. And it was that thing of, like, family, you know, misperceptions or kind of pride or whatever else. And wrote that, was really pleased with it. And that's when I met David J.
Right,
I'm on a tour with David, who I'd heard on the radio.
Yes,
and then that was really important for me, because that meant that it wasn't, not that David and I are from the same place, but we had enough shared interests that meant that I was like,
again,
okay,
he comes from more of a rap thing. He doesn't come from a literature thing. He was a rapper, so that gives you that comfort.
Completely, and he was just like, he was safe, and he was so talented, and it was that thing of like, right, okay, right. Not now.
He was a performer as well, exactly, so that would have been a good thing to see early on. Someone who's not just getting up and reading, here is my poem.
Listen, we're in Froome, wherever, right? In a bed and breakfast, 3 a.m, I'm writing rhymes with David J to a YouTube track or whatever. And it's like, and what was nice about it wasn't just about like, oh, okay, I'm allowed to do it. He was like, I want to be good at this, because I want this kid to think I'm good at this. And it's like, right, bam. So that's important as well, I think, that sense of like, right, talk about convincing yourself, should I be doing this? That was one of those moments where he was like, right, no, I want to be good at this. And then it was like, right, bam. And then just a whole lot of stuff started coming out.
Yeah.
And that were there with, and then people started recording it. It's timing, man.
Yeah.
And at the time, not many people were telling, like, overtly telling stories, I don't think, so much. Do you know what I mean? It's why it's so fun. First time I saw you with the hats, man.
Yeah.
It was like, it's a story. And people are eating. Like,
doing characters.
You know what I mean? It's like, it was that thing where it wasn't highbrow, but it was more than just, and the emotion of anger or whatever else.
Yeah.
It was something that was crafted that gave you that, with people to hold on to and that you thought about afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And that as a skill, I think, is still something now that some people have, some people don't. And no matter how loud you are, without it, you never really get me.
Yeah. I think Apples and Snakes, it's key to give them a lot of love and shout-outs. Because, I mean, you've said that I've got a good work ethic. And again, I think that's one of the things that has given me a career above anything else. There's some... I've managed
to land some stuff.
But again, the work ethic is a key thing, but a lot of people don't have that. So whilst I never did any Apples and Snakes tours, it was because I was someone who'd go, right,
like, I'd
book a tour, I'll do this. Whereas a lot of spoken word artists won't. And Apples and Snakes took people like yourself, David J, Kate Tempest, all endless different people outside of London going, right, we're going to take you on the road and we're going to pay you and you're going to earn money. Yeah. And it took that risk away, because I think the thing, again, it all comes back to the show you're doing now and what we've talked about the whole thing time. There's tons of things to scare you off of doing things. Go, right, well, I can't really go and do a gig in Leeds because that all costs. Yeah. I need to get to Leeds and all this. So someone going, oh, no, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Now why can't
Completely.
You? Like,
Completely.
Like removing are your excuses. And that's what Apples and Snakes really did early on, to just go, no, you can. We'll get you there. We'll pay for your food and we'll give you some money on top of that.
The tricky thing, I guess, is that the flip side of that coin, which is kind of like I see a lot of, is that sense of, all right, if that happens on the back of you like making a decision and grafting, it's one thing. If you're 18 and the first thing that you write, that happens for you, without even wanting to, that's what your bar is. And so the next week when there's nothing there, you're like, right, and then you start the entitlement. There's a poison, right? So it's like, right. So it's that thing. It was a thing where I would always try and measure it in a sense of like, right, if I met you after a gig and we're talking, and you're like, you know, people, I run a night, will you come? Will you come? And you'd be like, yeah, I will. And
it's one of the bits of advice I always give to spoken word artists, is just go to open mics, because it's the most inbred scene in that way. Everyone who's at a spoken word gig is thinking about writing, or they already write and run something. It's that mad interaction. But yeah, so if someone's out after a gig asking you,
it means that I think there's something to be like, you can't. It's just talking, so you can't expect the world like on a plate. So it's like, right, yes, you might get a gig early on where you're paid wicked. You might do it for free. You might be in a pub, right? If you don't embrace all of that, you're gonna sink.
It's all of it. It's knowing your worth, but then also remembering,
of what you're doing.
Yeah.
That you're just speaking. You're just and I've had that with Best of All and Camp Best of All. I've gone to book people.
Yeah.
And it's someone who hasn't even blown up that much yet, but it's got a bit of heat, and they've got an agent, and their agent's like, oh no, I need this amount. And I've offended people because I get my budget.
Yeah.
For like example of Best of All, I get my budget, I don't pay myself, I divide it up,
yeah.
Here's my headliners, here's this. So it's not negotiable. No. If you want more money, I have to take it off someone else. So I'd have these agents or whatever trying to hardball me, and I'd be like, all right, no, it's cool, I'll leave it.
It's
and they'll be like, okay, what happened? No, because equally, if that's that person's value, I don't want to devalue them. I don't want them to feel that I'm saying, oh, you ain't shit. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I'd rather walk away. So I've had a few people who kind of had originally hit me up to play that I've then been like, all right, no, we'll leave that because that's not how it works at that thing. So it's finding the balance, though, because equally, if you're doing a headline tour,
mm-hmm.
then you should be being paid the right amount of all the people in that room. You should be making the most.
But it's not hard to see the scale, is it?
The promoter shouldn't, the venue shouldn't. You should know your worth and go, I'm putting these, I should be making the most. It doesn't have to be 10 times more. It could be a quid more, but I should be getting that highest cut. So.
And the trick is, but the scale is pretty obvious, right? Whether it to do with just like, you know, experience or numbers or whatever else, it's like, right, just, but you should start on a level of like, right, not expecting. So it's like, then you judge it on, but it's, you know,
it's why on the spoken word I've never had an agent. I've got an agent for live because again that's different. If you're getting tour vans, everything else, there's expenses, whereas on spoken word I have to be able to go, look, do I fancy that?
Yeah, completely.
And or again, read them a bit and go, I mean, I'd do this for free, but they've clearly got a bit of money.
Yeah.
I should be getting a bit of that money. You know what I mean? And finding that. So it's not as simple as, on again, like when you're in a band, it's completely legit. If you've played for a certain amount, if you start to play for less, then that can get... Do you know what I mean? It can look completely. Like it can lower your worth or value. So that's a valid thing. But yeah, for me, if it's just a rocking up and talking, you've got to be the flexibility.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
You've got to be the flexibility. There's not going to be a big loss. Let's start to wrap things up. I want to talk quickly of the middle point.
All right.
We've talked about hearing stories in the kitchen, going into to rapping,
mm-hmm.
stumbling into to something you later find out to be called spoken word.
Yep.
And we've talked about the full shows.
Yep.
There's a big chunk in the middle where you're an incredibly successful novelist.
Well,
let's touch on that, eh? I mean, you've done good. Again, a lot of people in the spoken word scene get poached to write books, and whether it be a collection or anything else, and no dig to anyone, but a lot of them end up doing what is known as vanity publishing, where it's kind of a paid for yourself. It's not, it is what it is. You've got a book, but have you got a book?
Yeah.
You've made a book.
It's tricky, isn't it? Yeah.
And again, it's as valid because you'll sell them at gigs and it's this and that, but you've not as polar bear as Stephen Camden. You've written, or two have been released, right? You've got a third on its way.
That's right.
Is that the case? And so how's that been, and how did that all come about, and how comfortable were you again?
Like everything else, right, that just has gone to kind of validated my sense that I'm kind of like I'm a wanderer who's like wants to tidy his room by the end, but like kind of like we'll go off tangents. It was like I was at a gig with Laura Dockrell, good friend, mate,
Laura.
Yeah, but friends from early on, right?
Yeah.
So we're there, and she could tell I'm sitting there, and at this point, I'd been doing stuff for a while. I was thinking about longer stories. It just felt like spoken word to me was like a thing where I was doing it when I was asked, but my brain was thinking about stories with more depth, just wanting something bigger.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there, she's like, you don't want to be here, do you? And I'm like, no, not really. She's like, what do you want to be doing? Go on, tell me right now. If you could be doing anything, what would you be doing? I was like, you know what? I'll be writing stories for myself at 13. They're like, what kind of stories? I'm like, stories. She's like, what books? I was like, I don't know, She's like, well, what's your agent doing? I'm like, what? So what's your agent doing about that? I was like, I ain't got an agent. She's like, what are you talking about? Hold on. Texted her agent there and then, put her phone down. We're watching the next person. I love polar bear stuff. Do you want to come and see me tomorrow? I'm like, are you joking?
Amazing.
That's how arbitrary something like that is. What? This is how little I know. So it's like that kind of sense of me wondering and not caring about these things has hindered me in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's led to these kind of moments that are annoying. Then you're like, right, okay, so I go and meet her agent. She's like, what do you want to write about? I said, well, she's like, tell me your ideas. I'm like, well, I went to my mum's house recently, found a tape of me rhyming to myself in the future. And I was like, imagine if I could say one thing to myself then, what would I have said? I don't want to write like a, what's that film? It's a film with like, Jim Caviezel-Lim, where the, no, it's a Frequency. There's a film where they talk to each other through radio.
Yeah,
that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just want to hear. I wanted to hear at 13. If I'd heard one thing that would have changed my life, what would it have been? And I want to write about a girl now finding a tape, and they're connected. He's her dad, but she doesn't realize, and did all this kind of stuff. It's like, right. She's like, okay, go write 20 pages. And I'm like, and I left, and I'm like, but is she my agent? No, I don't know what the hell. So I was like, bam. And the similar thing with the Exposed thing, with the David J. Tour. I was like, right, this is going to be wicked.
Yeah.
Write 20 pages, send it to her, right? And then I remember really clearly getting an email back from her going, like, right, these are the people I'm going to send it to. Is this okay? Like, reading off all these publishers. And I'm like, top of the list was a publisher who published a writer called Jenny Valentine, who wrote a book called Broken Soup, which was for teenagers, whatever that means. And I'd loved it.
Yeah.
So the first people we're meeting are the people who published that. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine with me, playing it cool. We sit down. She's like, right, we've got all these meetings set up. All these people want to meet you. First people up are HarperCollins. And I'm like, okay, wicked, right? We're meeting them. She's like, right, play it cool. When they come in, they're going to talk about what they think. We'll get a lot more people to meet.
Yeah.
We're not going to make any decisions now, leave. So they come in, they're talking about this idea. Like, not me.
Yeah.
Polar bear. They're talking about an idea for this story that I've had, and like my mind went nuts. I held it down, but I'm like, they're talking about an idea.
Yeah.
And it became so clear that it's like, right, it's not, I don't want it to be about me.
Yeah.
I want it to be about the other. And they left, and I'm like, please, Catherine, please. Please. They're like, she's like, chill.
Cool.
We've got to meet them next week.
Yeah.
Going to Birmingham that day for the weekend on the way up. She's like, okay, I get an email from her. This is a bit unusual. This doesn't normally happen. They've done what's called a preempt. They want to offer you some money to write the book, but not to speak to anybody else. And they don't want to offer you this much money. And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm like, yeah, please. She's like, hold on. I think I might be able to get a little bit more. And I'm like, and you know what I mean? This is blowing my mind at this point. And I get, by the time I leave her from like 3 days ago,
I get so scared on them emails where you're like, look, don't ruin it.
Exactly.
Just accept it.
No, exactly.
But again, that's their job to do it right.
That's their job. And also as well, if somebody wants you to do it. So I get to Birmingham. Wednesday, I've got a gig. I don't want to be there. Saturday, I'm in my mom's kitchen going, Mom, I think I'm going to be writing a book, right? And then my brain always does is like, well, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Going to write a book or whatever else. And then my mom went to me. She looked at me in the face in that kind of like mom way. She's like, you've been writing stuff 10, 11, 12 years 100%. Before then.
Yeah.
Shut up. You apologise again, I'm going to slap you in the face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool. Wrote a book, signed for two. I've signed, and then that went pretty well. Signed to write three more. So the first one is done. They're all independent novels.
Yeah.
They'll all be on the YA or the teen fiction shelf because they basically have teenage protagonists. But people read them of all ages. Exactly. So it's like, it's the juice of it is, man. Like, that book is there now. Some people will find it, some people won't.
Yeah.
But some people, that email that I get that
finds it,
that's treasure.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's done on your terms with no pressure. And it's an amazing feeling.
It's crazy, man, because people who only know us through our work or through whatever else might think, oh, look, they've done this or done that. But it's weird that I'll say all the time, hey, you just need to do it. You just need to get out there and do it. But it's still something I need reminding of
completely,
constantly,
mate.
And I forget. The last, or when we did that Bang Said the Gun thing. So what was that? 3 years ago?
Must be
three, four years ago. I was talking to you at that point about a script idea I had and this and that. I literally wrote a little pilot.
Yeah,
finally got around to writing a pilot in December.
Cool.
And I'm in negotiations with people at the moment and stuff like that. And it was exactly one then that even though as soon as I started writing it, I was like, of course I can write a story. This is what I do. But it took me two, 3 years of going, oh, I'll need to learn how the program works and I'll need to learn how the structure. And as soon as I was like, it's the fucking, we live in the future. It's all so intuitive. Like you get the program and it's fucking there.
What you realise is now, I want to talk to you about this as well because I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm in the same stage where I've written a thing and we're talking about a thing for the screen. I want to talk to you anyway. But it's like, What you realize, I relearn constantly after talking myself out of it and telling myself that I still shouldn't be here. It's like ideas are the commodity.
Yeah.
And so many people don't have 100 ideas waiting in their head, and you're like, oh, bloody hell, of course, it's all right.
And you forget, it's what those people at HarperCollins, they're looking for you.
Yeah.
They're praying you walk in the door.
Yeah.
They're not sitting there going, hope no one comes in today because we've got a lot of stuff on.
That's
and that's a huge realization. after I did the King Arthur film, which comes out soon.
When's it come out, lad?
It comes out May 12th, I think. So it's out very soon. I still don't know if I'm particularly in it. Like, I only had a small role, and I know there's been a lot of editing, so I'm concerned.
Because it's been coming a while.
I'm concerned if I overhype it. Yeah, we filmed it 2 years ago. I'm concerned if I overhype it, people will go, and I'll just be like in the background once. But fucking hell, it's a cinema. I'm going to be going. But yeah, and Neil Maskell, who's an amazing actor, I adore, he gave me a book that was advice, and one of the things in it was basically saying that when you're going into a casting, their ideal day is you come in, you do your thing,
you're really good,
that's done, on to the next character. It's another job, and you get this in your head that you're like, oh, I'm in competition. This is like, no, their ideal situation, they want you to do good. Like when you're a teenager and you're at a club and you will make so many excuses for a girl that you think's attractive. And she'll be acting like a dickhead. You're like, she's cute. She's this and she's that. And then as soon as you've either been out or whatever, you're like, oh, no, she was a dickhead. Or mates as well. A guy you think's cool from back home. You'll be like, no, he's cool, man. He's cool. He's like, no, he was a dickhead. You make these excuses. It's similar. Yeah. They're looking to make a lot of excuses for you, even if it's not polished or perfect. They want you to have it. So that should be a motivation to go and do everything.
Like anything else, right? It's like the trick is to walk the line between the self-validation and still holding that humility that you shouldn't, it's not a given that you're going to get it. You know what I mean? And that's what's hard, man.
Yeah.
And that's why you meet people and you see people who are like, you know, we've got people who would be quote-unquote famous around the world that we've known and kind of grew up with, and it's like, right, you just forget that it's like, right, it's not everyone, I don't think anyone starts as a dickhead, right? Yeah. I don't think that can be the case. Maybe there must be some people, we could name names now, but like, they're like, you're like, right, but you're doing some dickhead stuff, mate.
Yeah.
But then you're like, right, imagine not ever getting to be yourself and whatever else. It's like, I think it's interesting that you're kind of with the casting and the kind of the acting stuff now, because like that, to me, of all the things that we've touched pretty much the majority of the scenes or whatever it were in the industry, music or whatever else. It's like, that seems the most hardcore.
Yeah.
Because you could go, and then it's like, bam. It's
but
like,
that's
like,
it. It's exactly what you were saying about enjoying what you're doing for what it is. So I did Taboo. Like, we filmed that.
Yeah.
The beginning of 2016, I guess. And since
then, that bit when you're walking, lad, and things are blowing up.
That's some nuts shit right there. Again, number one, I'm there just enjoying that. But since then, I've had tons of auditions. And I've got one thing that I'm starting soon. It was a similar thing. I got an email off my agent. We can get more money. I'm like, man, Stephen Graham's in it, and David Johns is in it. Like, people I've had on the podcast that I love. It's like, just say yes now, kind of thing. But we'll get some more money. It's like, all right, well, you do you. But in the last 6 months, one of the things I've enjoyed the most, I auditioned for, and I can talk about it now, I'd imagine, I auditioned for the next series of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it, but the brief was, this character could be male or female, of any ethnicity, from anywhere in America.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, that means, number one, if I don't get it, it doesn't matter. Because, again, if I lose out to a short black girl, it's like, I can't compete there. But it's the most fun I've had, because I got to create that character.
What did you do?
I had a script. I went really, again, I won't say what he is, because that might be giving stuff away. But I went really kind of the Dirty South, kind of almost hypnotic, charming, but weird and creepy and odd. I was like, this is
Did anyone see you practicing at home?
I was practicing in my spare room. I did this whole thing. And again, it's that over-preparing. Again, because I'm new to it, I was like, right, I turned a camera on at home, and I riffed as this character. I made up a monologue on the spot. And again, it's the advantage that we have of coming from writing backgrounds, is in those situations, you've got a bit of that. So I did this. And then I went in and I did this audition, and it's scripted and all that.
Yeah.
And they were saying, oh, we're looking for a certain this and a certain that. And like, before I've auditioned, they said, what people haven't done so far is this. And I was like, but this might sound weird, but I've got like a video on my phone of me doing this. Like,
what,
do you want me to send you that? I was like, I didn't have it on me. I had a link. And they were like, that'd be dope. And like, I sent it across. So as part of my audition, I did the audition on the day, and also sent just me in my spare room, just kind of rambling into camera like a madman.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was the most fun I've had. I didn't get that.
But it could have been the thing.
I can't wait to see what they do with it, and I'm excited about it. But
that could have also been the thing that was the reason. You just don't know that uncertainty of it, man.
But that's it. You don't know. I've worked in record stores and been in charge of interviews, and I've known that I've had people I walk in, and for one reason or another, the second they walk in, I'm like, nah. So I know that's going to happen in casting and shit as well.
Completely.
So there's no ego or fear of that. It's just, all right, let's...
Yeah, yeah. Let's and in the meantime, what a way to fill your day, man. Do you know what I mean?
It's a great laugh. You get to play about. Again, same. And I'm not having to have the pressure of it being anything.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's in that moment. And it's same. What excites me about things like your current show. To come full circle as we wrap things up,
yep.
Is that it's... It is kind of, obviously you've got this show, but it is an interactive thing. It is a thing of the moment. So each one has got something that it lives in that moment and then it dies in that
I
moment.
Need
and that's what's beautiful
yeah,
about
I
it.
Yeah, I need you with me. It's like a thing where
it's what scares me about it as well. I mean, I'm going to come, but as we were discussing, or when you were saying about what, or talking to your boy about what could embarrass you, which incidentally I'm going to say now, if... I've got a podcast network, so if you want the first 11-year-old having conversations podcast, then let's talk, because that sounds amazing.
Let's talk.
but the thing of embarrassing is, I'm that. Again, it's similar, I think. If we're at a gig, I think the last thing both of us want is the person on stage to go, you're polar bears in the crowd. You want to come up and do something?
Okay, that would be embarrassing. I'm not in that situation anymore.
Yeah.
But that would get me.
Yeah.
That would get me every time.
And that's the one thing that's made me scared of your show is that there is interaction. But again, I know the way you work is it's not a stand-up calling people out.
No,
it's this,
not at all.
Let's get involved. Let's
no,
do
I need
this
you
in a
to
comfort
help
way.
Me with a story. So it's help rather than attack.
You do
know
something.
I mean?
Yeah.
No pressure. The whole thing is anti-pressure.
So where can people find out? It's on at the BAC?
Yeah, it's called Dark Corners. It's on the BAC, Battersea Arts Centre, until the 22nd of this month, April. It's 7 p.m, Wednesday to Saturday. It's an hour long, and it's a fun hour of making stuff up, pretending you're 13 years old.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much
Not
for chatting.
Not at all,
it's
what
always
a pleasure. Good to see you,
and we should do it more often, and off records, so when we're referencing all those... Those people, we can say their actual names.
Yeah, we can.
Excellent. All right, mate.
Nice one.
You've been listening to Scroobish Pips Discretion Pieces.
That was Polar Bear, a.k.a. Stephen Camden. I love that dude, and it was amazing to get to have that chat. And I'm so happy that I've got this podcast that allows me to schedule time with my mates to catch up, and hopefully you guys enjoy it and take it in. I'm going to leave the ending short, because I rambled for a long time at the beginning, and this is a long-as-fuck episode, because we slung that spoken word piece in the middle, which is one of my favourite pieces of all time. I didn't say it to his face, but I could recite 90% of that poem off the top of my head at any time. I think it's amazing. I think Polar Bear's amazing. Check out At Home with Polar at speechdevelopmentrecords.com if you get a chance. Also, check out the returning Tuesday Night Jaw, which returned this week on the Stretch Pieces Network. Say Why to Drugs, which is huge and blowing up. There was a new Stop and Search last week. And Hardcore Listing, as said. So thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next week when I'm joined by Kelly Marcel, who, as I said, sold a script... As she'd written when she was working in a video shop, she sold it to Steven Spielberg. She went back and continued working in the video shop for a bit, worked on and wrote more scripts, and has had the most is having the most amazing career. So she's an inspirational and fascinating person, happens to be one of my best friends. So check that out. I'll see you next week. Ta-ta.